This episode is brought to you by CBS All Access. If you don't already subscribe to CBS All Access, please use our affiliate link by going to talkthroughmedia.com/CBS. Using our affiliate link gives us a little credit, which helps us to keep bringing you great content. U.S. residents only. Hello, and welcome to episode 4 of the Star Trek Picard cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And this afternoon, we are here to do a very special preseason Picard roundtable. I love doing roundtables, so I'll find any excuse to do one. but specifically, we're going to start with a topic that our patron LT from NC, who you all know, he suggested for us what makes Picard such a compelling character. And we looked at it, we thought that is such a great topic. We don't want to make it just for the Patreon. We want to have it for everybody. So we've got 7 of us on. Some of us may have to leave early. So we'll try to schedule these things accordingly. But we'll go around the horn. And first of all, I just mentioned him, but first person I'm going to say hello to is LT from NC, Lawrence Todd.
Hi, Brian, and everybody else. I'm excited to be here, and I'm also excited that you chose my topic.
We're excited to have you as well. And this is your second roundtable with us. And
it is.
Also, you were also on our a recent Patreon call, so... It's great to have you. Also returning for is this your second or your third roundtable, Fred?
Third.
I thought so. If you go to our blog posts, you'll see his wonderful visuals from the episodes. And of course, you know his fantastic voicemails, Fred from the Netherlands.
Hello, all listeners to Talk Through Media. This is Fred from the Netherlands.
Next is also a fellow Patreon and James, the Augmented Sailor, James Robbins. This is your second roundtable with us, I believe.
It is my second, yes.
And you've been a fantastic supporter for the show pretty much since we started.
Do what I can.
And we've got 2 new roundtableists for this time. The first person, if you know Star Trek and you have been around in fandom, you really should know our next guest. He does a podcast called The Trek Files on the Roddenberry Podcast Network. And are you considered a host of the Ready Room, or are you just sort of like a special guest on there?
Hello, mystery voice speaking from the darkness. Somewhere in the last few years, when host Chris Jones has had time issues and can only do it like 2 or 3 times a year, somewhere I went from being a regular guest to he started calling me a co-host, which I haven't seen the money for that. But so yeah, somewhere in a big gray area there.
Well,
it's a much bigger Ready Room than it used to
be. And we want to, anyway, so this mystery guest is none other than Dr. Trek, Larry Nemechek of the Trek Files, Portal 47, who I've been a longtime member of. Really happy to have you here with us talking about Star Trek, talking about Picard.
I didn't know you were so gobsmacked, Brian. No, thanks. It's fun to be here. It's fun to have you be the master and me get to be the rebellious slave.
Yeah. And usually on the Porter 47 stuff, you have to herd us in like cats. So this time I get to do the cat herding.
Or cat dumb or cat fandom or something.
Yeah.
Yes, a little bit. But thanks for having me. And I just want to say it's great. I get to see Lawrence Todd, one of my Patreons, on Trekland Tuesdays Live.
Yes.
For the first time, talk and see. So this will be fun. Thanks.
Great. And last but not least, if you are a listener of Talk Through Media, you know this guest, because he is not just a guest. He is a co-host with me on The Walking Dead Talk Through and Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. Mark, he's not related to Robert Kirkman.
Well, thank you, and greetings and felicitations, children of technology. I'm here.
And you also do Panels to Pixels, which is...
That I do, yeah.
Yes. All right, so let's get started with our topic for today,
which is... Longest needs no introduction round ever.
I know. What makes Picard such a compelling character? And I'm going to start with LT, because this was your topic. So what do you have to say about Picard?
Thank you. One of the things that I was looking at when they announced the series is everyone was so excited that, you know, you're going to get to see Jean-Luc Picard back in the saddle, back in action again, back on TV. And I was thinking about, you know, what was the biggest thing that everybody loved about that character. And so I sort of sat back and said, okay, let's look at, you know, all the captains that we love and what are the qualities they have, but why is Picard seem to be like the popular captain? And I looked at it that he was, when you look at the beginning of the series, he was the seasoned captain. You know, the Enterprise was not his first command, but he was, you know, experienced through the course of the series. He handled, you know, danger situations well. He handled diplomatic situations well. You know, he worked well with his crew. And that seemed to be very resonant with a lot of the fans. They really liked that quality, that he was older and he was, you know, calm, and that when he had to be a man of action, he would take action, but he was not always going to go to a combative solution first. He tried to be diplomatic. He tried to work things out. And when you look at all the other captains, and James will appreciate this just being prior service, that you look at somebody like Kirk, that Kirk was, you know, he was kind of the hot dog. He made all his promotions on time. You know, he came up through the ranks quickly. So he was still younger and he was brash. And sometimes he made some decisions that were, you know, maybe not as well thought out, but he was always concerned about his crew, always concerned about his ship. But he had that, you know, take the active solution first kind of feel. You look at somebody then like Sisko, and I like Sisko, but if you look in the beginning of the series, he wasn't a captain. That he was older, he was kind of burned out, he'd had bad experiences through Wolf 359. He got this assignment, and it's kind of, again, with the military experience, this is kind of like, we need somebody to do this job, you're on the list, we're sending you. But he turned out to be, and I thought about this on the way back from work this morning, he was kind of the Batman captain. He was not necessarily the captain we wanted, but he's the captain we needed. That there's things that he did that, you know, he was willing to get his hands dirty. He was willing to bend the rules a little bit, but he got the job done. And that's something that people love about him. You look at somebody like Janeway, that she ended up being the right captain in the right place at the wrong time. That, you know, she just ended up being on the ship that got sent to the Delta Quadrant. That's been one of the things about her character, that there are things that she did because, you know, she's out in the middle of nowhere. I always liked Archer because he basically was put in a position where you're taking a crew of people that have never been out in this neck of the woods, and you're basically blazing a trail out there for humanity. And yeah, he had to make a lot of decisions that he was not necessarily, there was no precedent for. You know, there was no training, nothing. There was not a Starfleet Academy for him to go through to get the experience from all the previous captains. This, you know, of course, then we've had Pike. And just to get back around to Picard, you know, Pike became the captain that we all appreciated because he was always, you know, took care of his crew, took care of his ship. And there's a reason that the writers almost segue that into, this is why everybody talks about in the previous generations of why Pike was one of the most famous decorated captains in Starfleet. But since we've got the Picard series, and I've gone all through this, everybody still loves Picard. And I think that it's the way he was written, it's the way that Patrick Stewart portrayed him. But yet you look at this captain who did a lot of difficult things. You know, he dealt with the Borg. He had the situation where he was assimilated. He dealt with that once he was de-assimilated. You know, he made a lot of really hard decisions and still managed to, for the most part, keep his crew together. And those are the kind of things that I wanted to get somebody else, you know, throw out here for the rest of the crew to talk about, that Picard has been so emblematic of what we expect from a Starfleet officer. And just for the logistics of it, look at Next Gen had one of the longest runs of any of the series. So we got to see more of him. You know, we only had 3 seasons of Kirk. We only had 4 seasons of Archer. So between the 3 longest running series, DS9, Next Gen, and Voyager, you know, I think that Picard still comes out pretty high as far as the captain we all esteem, and the one that when you think about, you know, who would you want to have leading you in a difficult situation, people will say, oh, I want Jean-Luc Picard. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of things that I was looking at, and I was excited when they chose one of the topics I suggested, and I'm really looking forward to see what the rest of you guys have to say about it.
Yeah. All right. That's a good start. Fred, what about you?
Yeah. What you immediately do if you look to Picard and then just listening to LT is compare him to other captains. You go around and look at all the captains. Actually, my favorite Star Trek series is DS9 and not the Next Generation. But did I like Sisko the best? No, I didn't. I liked Kira there. So if you are talking about compelling characters, you almost immediately go to compelling captains. And I think if you compare Jean-Luc Picard to, for instance, Spock, and talking about compelling, I get it. Well, it becomes quite difficult to me which to choose. So it's not a competition in the sense of who is the most compelling person. That was not the question. The question was, why is Picard compelling? And I think Picard is compelling. But is he the most compelling character in the Star Trek universe? Then my answer would probably be no. And go to other figures, and even no captains. I like, for instance, Quark in DS9 a lot.
I would not want Quark to be the captain of my starship.
No, but he is. He is, well, he did pilot, I think, some spacecraft somehow, yes. some once or so. Mm-hmm. That didn't went, that didn't
go. Got himself
go,
in and out of time.
Yeah.
That was his uncle's.
That didn't went well.
No, it didn't.
But if I compare then, as LT did, the captains, then Jean-Luc Picard is more than all the others a kind of statesman, a kind of Winston Churchill. He is, as LT also said, into diplomacy, and he can do everything. He could be an ambassador, he could be an admiral, he could be even the leader of Starfleet, whatever. He has all that is needed to be a statesman, actually. And that you already see that when he is acting as a captain. And one of the other aspects about that is that he doesn't go with all the away teams. He is in his ship and regulating everything.
Right.
So that makes him different than all the other ones.
He shows trust.
I would agree with that. James, what about you?
For me, it's hands down his portrayal. It's Patrick Stewart.
You're cutting out again, unfortunately. I think you said your portrayal. Yeah, he's frozen completely. All right. Well, while you're trying to fix that, I'm going to go to Larry next.
Oh, it's the accent. this has all been a great start here. I mean, the bit about staying on your ship was part of the, I mean, some parts of Picard are like baked into the DNA of the birth order of the family of shows. Right. So they're all like a pendulum away from what came, but they're always a reaction to what came before.
Right.
You know, it's like Next Gen is just going to be people who don't fall in the same roles as the original did. And it won't be a young, brash captain. It'll be a statesman. I mean, a lot of things grew as the show went along, but one of the first things was, you know, it is silly for a captain to go down on a landing party or an away team every single first time. You put the young guys there, you're too much invested to do that every time. So that was, and then until the reality of TV and actors and egos, and Patrick is like, I want to do some running and jumping and shooting. So they finally did let it. That was literally what happened. So yeah, third season. So, but it did instill the DNA of Patrick, that of Picard, that it's an ambassadorial long view, but they all, that was part of it too. He was on the Stargazer for 33 years, you know, kind of a thing as an under officer. And then, so that's it. But one of the things, and I always thought this was like a token thing, because it, to me, it's always goes back to the first duty, and not that the other cat, and I guess we get into this thing of comparing on captains, but I'm trying to make it stand alone too.
Yeah.
The first duty, and one of his famous quotes is, you know, the first duty of every Starfleet officer is to the truth. And it starts off as and what's really burned in my head is hearing Ron Moore and Michael Piller talk about the big fight they had during writing, because it was Ron's show. And then Michael was showrunner and was like, you know, Uber last call.
Right.
And Ron, being a younger guy in his 20s, was saying, oh, no, Wesley, in that the plot about the cadet team covering up for the accident, right, of the Nova Squadron and all that.
Yeah.
And having finally everything busts wide open, and it turns out that Wesley is the one that cracks, because he's covering up for his friends. Finally, Picard convinces him that, no, he's got to do the right thing by the truth. And they had the big fight. Was Ron was saying, no, anybody who's that age, if you're like 21 and 22, your friends are what it's all about, and you would never, never do this.
Yeah.
And Michael saying, no, if he's really going to be the kid we thought he was, if he's really going to be the embodiment of young Gene Roddenberry, the way he was designed to be, he's got to eventually come around for the greater truth. And that's what Picard is arguing for. And that's what obviously eventually carries the day. And years later, older Ron talking about this said or told me, you know, Michael was right. We couldn't have our young, you know, even though he was a recurring character by then, we couldn't have him not, you know, win out obviously by the truth. So at the time, and we talk about this, and it's like, oh, and here's our standard thing we're talking about now. And that, and at the time, it's kind of like, well, of course all Starfleet officers go for the truth, and they all do, but a lot of them are easier, you know, it's a time of war. Sisko famously in Pale Moonlight, you know, finagles that big time. Mm-hmm. And they all do.
It's a fact.
You know, and the prime directive and what we're doing. And Picard does too. Mm-hmm. But he at least seems to like have it on the shingle on the wall and beats everybody else up with it. And that seems to be the winning way in a lot of dilemmas. So even though at times it felt like, well, the trite thing to say and the obvious easy thing to say, in the world we live in today, people are screaming because with truth comes clarity, even if you don't agree with it or you're not happy with where it takes you, at least it's on firm, clear ground. I mean, I don't think the phrase fake news ever entered into the lexicon of Star Trek anywhere, but I'm sitting here thinking about it today and why it's so looked forward to, why the series is so looked forward to now by people that know Trek and maybe by unsuspecting future Trek folks out there, we can get it to them. That may be what's, you know, that something that we all take for granted, or we think, well, of course, duh, you know, or have a Janeway speech about what Starfleet is and it's in there, you know, or something. It's like, well, duh. But maybe it's like maybe time to cherish that a little more than everything and everything else, the calmer head and the, you know, oh, and they used to make fun of Picard, you know, oh, yeah, you know, you've got an enemy on the view screen. They're going to fire at you in 10 seconds. Conference. And everybody, you know, they used to make, you know, they would make fun. That was the meme on Picard. But there's times when you appreciate that. We seem to be living in a time when clarity and a calm head and most of all the truth seems to be valued because that leads to good qualities all down the line. Anyway, that's my two cents.
Yeah. The first duty, the first episode featuring Tom Paris. I mean, Nick Locarno.
If your name was Nick Locarno, wouldn't you try to go change it later on? Yeah.
James, what about you? What makes Picard such a compelling character for you?
All right. Well, as I was beginning to say before I had issues, to me, it's Patrick Stewart's portrayal. Mm-hmm. Without him, the show really would have never gotten off the ground, I don't think.
Yeah.
He almost changed the character because, and you can kind of see it in like Encounter at Farpoint. It's so stiff, and I think it's just the way it was written, and it was just... It was just like, my God. And he was just challenging everybody. Like he's got Riker doing the manual saucer separation and all this. And it's just like, and it was almost hard to get behind that. And then I think as he kind of fleshed out the character more and more, it started to get a lot better.
Okay. Mark, what about you?
Well, I have to agree with LT based upon how Kirk was. He was very outgoing and pushing forward, and he didn't trust his command, so he was at every away, you know, away team. And whereas, you know, with Picard, he would actually go out there and do stuff, but he would only do it willingly because he actually trusted his team. And that's the whole point. It's like Kirk never trusted his team. He always had to be there. And the same thing with Janeway, too. Even though I'm a huge Voyager fan, I love Janeway. But the thing is that whole series was her fortitude of getting what she needed, which was basically to get everybody back. With Picard, he actually did everything that he needed to do and trusted those. And then he learned from his trusting those, even though they made mistakes.
Right.
And then on top of that, you got Sisko. He was learning. He was still learning, even though he was just like, I'm run down. I'm here. I'm stuck at a space station. I have to be in command. But he does what he needs to do. And at times, he does show that fortitude of trying to apply that whole Kirk mentality. But I think that with Picard, he's more seasoned in the sense that, you know, look, he was assimilated by the Borg. He was recovered from the Borg. Mm. He learned, and I think he sort of learned some sort of humility and humanity and understanding everything that's out there, whereas all these other captains out there have not. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Janeway at certain points did, as well as Sisko. Kirk, not so much, because we only got three seasons. So, but the thing is that I think with the fact that we had the Next Generation, we had a lot to work with, because how many seasons did that span in comparison to all the other seasons of all these other shows? So we had a well-rounded captain overall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. Ruthie, what about you?
I think for me, I've kind of, I mean, it's hard to articulate on one hand, because he just has a quality that's like, I can't tell if the quality is Picard or if the quality is Patrick Stewart or a combination of both. But I think this is something I've been thinking about while I'm doing my rewatch of The Next Generation. I feel like he's a thinking captain, I guess, in my opinion. He doesn't really like emote, really. And he even says that he doesn't show his emotions in front of his crew. But of course, watching the movies as well, we know that he has very strong emotions, especially when it comes to the Borg. But he's kind of like the thinking man's captain, I guess. He's very logical, analytical. And these are qualities that I appreciate, because I try to apply logic and be analytical. It doesn't always work, but, you know, yeah. I am not a Vulcan. So I think that's probably one of the things that compels me the most about him. He doesn't really set aside his beliefs and values when it's convenient, and he stands up for them. He doesn't let other people bully him, even when they think that they're in the right. He is pretty much always on the side of everybody has a right to life. Even the crystalline entity who's just roaming through the universe, the galaxy, whatever, destroying everything that comes in his path. He even fights for that thing's right to life. So he doesn't automatically, his first go-to is not always, let's destroy it, kill, kill, kill.
Right. So,
He wants to analyze and understand. He wants to understand. He wants to try and get all viewpoints, which is why he has the conference.
Yeah. Yeah. And he does that, I think, more than any of the other captains. Yeah. I think for me, go ahead. If you got more, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think he also, his people love him too, because they appreciate that he.
Yes.
Will respect their point of view and respect their opinion and hear it. And just because he doesn't follow their advice or do what they think that should be done doesn't mean that they're not valued. And I think that's really important in a leader. A leader needs to convey to his people that I want your input because I don't know everything, but at the same time, ultimately the decision is mine. And so I'm going to be the one to make it. Whether or not I follow your opinion or advice doesn't mean that it's not valid. So I think that's important in a leader as well.
Yeah. He shows a lot of humility and saying that he doesn't know everything. And that's exactly a great trait. Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, the overall context, Ruthie was talking, I was thinking that I'm thinking of when he's collecting opinions, but then not afraid to not take them.
Right.
The people that get barked at the most, I think, are Worf and Beverly. Worf, because he's usually wanting action first, and Beverly, because prime directive or something.
We have to save the people.
We have to save the people.
But what I'm saying is, in both cases, it happens over and over and over again, which not only means that he has no qualm telling them that, but they have no qualm coming back again and again and again because of the environment and the atmosphere that he's laid down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, for me,
and not just because showrunners kept changing. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, exactly. For me,
which actually they didn't.
It's true. For me, I would say that of all the captains that we've had in Star Trek, Picard is the one that I would most like to be like. And I would also say the one that I would most like to serve under, because he inspires. You guys have already mentioned about the fact that he always seeks options from his crew, and yet when the time comes and he makes a decision, no one questions that, because he has sought all the opinions, and if he's heard a better option, he'll take it. But at the same time, he's willing to put his stamp down and say, this is what we're going to do. He's a fantastic leader. He's a fantastic diplomat. I'd say of all of the captains, he's the most intellectual, which I appreciate. I could never be him because I can't turn off my humor button. But so, but aside from that, he has inspired me to be a better person in ways that I think none of the other captains have. And James, you talked about it, because I don't think that you can separate Jean-Luc Picard from Sir Patrick Stewart. He's just the best damn actor that Star Trek has ever had. And we've had some great ones.
Absolutely.
But, you know, he kicks butt every scene, and he's so great at doing it. And I'll just say for that, I'll say,
no!
Because
he's the reason we got Alan Rickman in Galaxy Quest.
Not good enough, damn it! Not good enough!
And I bring those up because those are two examples of scenes where Patrick Stewart is just so inspiring to me, how much he commands there and commands a scene. And Ruthie and I were talking about this actually last episode. You know, he was there and was able to stabilize Sarek at a time when he needed to be on the top of his game, at a time when he could not be the Sarek, the rational, diplomatic Vulcan that he had been for 202 years. He needed Picard at that moment, and I think only Picard would have been able to fulfill that point. So anyway, I could probably go on 2 hours talking about how much I love Picard as a character, but I don't want to do that.
Let's talk about every episode. How great in this one.
Well, can, I don't know where you're going. Can I throw something in here that we got?
Absolutely.
Off, that we get, because and what's ironic now, watching Picard unspool, and some of us have got to see premieres. Some of it's coming up Thursday. Mm-hmm. But all the promos that have been out there, there's a lot of hints along the way. But the biggest thing is, we talk about the way he runs his ship and what he lays down for his crew, and we talk about honesty, and we talk about, I mean, some of the, and then Patrick as an actor, how much of that dimension that we look at the character impact as, you know, what Patrick brought, and we've talked about that too. And a lot of this is, yes, going back and looking at the pilot, and there are some threads there that's either, you know, a lot of times what actors give is what writers run with. Nobody planned for Worf and Jadzia to be a couple, but it's the minute they got on stage on film together, there were sparks. I'm like, holy crap, you know, or Spock and McCoy, you know.
Yeah. The writers just had to bring them together because of the on-screen chemistry.
Yeah. Same thing with Spock and McCoy back in the 60s. They were like, oh my God. So part of this, so the whole thing about, you know, Picard and kids is like a plot point about Wesley and a discomfort with his mother. And, you know, his mother wasn't even supposed to be a character. She was supposed to leave at the first. And Wesley was the whole reason.
Yeah.
The family thing. Wesley was the whole, because they wanted this genius kid to represent Gene as a kid and be the awkward teenager who's, you know, now he's got a place to be, as opposed to every awkward teenager out there who feels out of place in his own time.
Or Leslie Crusher,
either way, which would have been amazing, you know, 20 years before Buffy.
An alternate timeline.
They'd done it right. We talked about that on Trek Files once. But maybe it was a good thing it didn't happen.
I can only imagine the Mary Sue comments that would have come out.
Especially closer to original fandom.
Yeah, but people were so harsh on Wesley. I'm not sure.
And it was the writer's fault. It was never Will's fault. He was just doing what he was told.
Right. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah. Totally.
But my
people
point
are
was,
still harsh on Wesley.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was just fun
to be harsh on him.
I actually enjoyed what he had presented as Wesley Crusher. I just love Wesley Crusher.
Yeah. He was one of my favorites when
and
he was on.
Yeah. Worth saying.
You will get him back because he's going to do some kind of after Trek.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what a masterstroke for making him the host. I'm very happy.
But they should have, if they'd done that with Discovery at the beginning, but especially now. But back then they would have.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are they going to have Patrick Stewart on though and tell him to shut up?
They should.
They should have, he should have some guest on, and halfway through the show, Patrick should stick his head through the curtain.
And yes.
And Sir Ian.
But my point here was the whole thing about families being on the ship was to explain why the kid was there. And then the whole thing about Picard and kids was a plot point about Wesley in the beginning, mm-hmm. to give an arc to his discomfort and to show how far, what this kid must be like, because Picard is so impressed with him that he's, you know, all that. But then they took it and they ran with it and made it a running character bit. But there's some things they didn't. The whole thing about, like, I think it's been said by somebody, so it's not a spoiler. I think the clip's been out. So Picard speaks some French in a very kind of, yes. small little moment in the premiere. Mm-hmm. So it's not a big deal. But it's like the first time, aside from saying merde once or twice, it's like the first time since the first couple of episodes that he actually says something in French, which they gave up on. They just, oh, forget it. He's British. We'll just have him speak. You know, and they were trying to do it. They were
Even
trying to do
it. His name
a French,
is Jean-Luc.
Well, yeah, they were trying, and they kept him in Le Bar, France, and all that. But they were trying to do a French joke with, talk about things changing since the pilot. They tried to do a French joke with Picard, like they used to have the Chekhov Russian joke, where he would try to make little stabs of pride about being French, and it lasted one or two times, and they went, this is stupid, let's drop it. But but my point is that there are little threads that are planted early that get brought out, and whether you want to think, you know, and some things better than others, and whether that's totally up to Patrick or not or whatever, a lot came by. But my bigger thing here is, over the run of the series, we get off on these things about Picard, and now the Borg have brought the Locutus factor back. But look at what he wound up doing. Talk about the guy who called staff meetings and he's the most intellectual of the captains. I remember at the end of the pilot thinking, wow, this is great. When we first watched the show in 87, and I'm thinking, this is amazing. And all of these characters are so raw and they're going to get formed. And I remember thinking, boy, you can tell who was the Shakespearean actor in this group, because the one character that you see mostly formed, at least to begin with, is Picard, and the rest of them are okay. It's just the pilot, and they're going to bring it, you know, they're going to develop the show, obviously. But of all the characters, you thought, wow, the captain and his is a, it just showed who was the most stage trained actor, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But as the show went, what I think we forget about sometimes is, look, we get off on, he survived Locutus, and you know, he did it. But when Sins of the Father went by, and then Reunion went by, I was like, so did I just see that the Klingon Empire put their faith in their future in a human?
Yeah.
You know, when he was Arbiter of Succession, did, you know, who else has infiltrated Romulus to go find Spock? Yeah. On a, it's like, mm-hmm. all exactly. of these situations. And then maybe it wasn't the biggest mission, but then to be the you know, chain of command, the torture and all that. And it wasn't all Cardassia even. It was one of the out of control Cardassians. Madred would be a lot like Dukat probably, but not as well grounded in
with compartmentalizing, an accent too.
With an accent. Yeah. Well, that's the only way you can have that. It had to be, you know, the French British, the British French guy and the British Cardassian guy. But my point here is, you talk about he could be an ambassador and he was intellectual. And my God, look, if he wasn't toward the end of the series, if he wasn't a Starfleet captain, he almost got seduced into going back to archaeology with Galen, right? But my point is, you need somebody with a long view can be a better captain, a better commander, a cooler head in a crisis. And who else in all of the Federation, much less Starfleet, they have a whole ambassador corps. But who winds up determining that gets the trust of Klingons, even allied Klingons, to be who's the outsider they let in to do that?
The Spock family, in the sense of Spock and Sarek, and his father.
And that's right. That too.
Well, there are others that are not captains.
And Dax, but you know.
No, I was agreeing with you was that, and you mentioned a minute ago, not you, but about. Who else but Picard was, I mean, he had Vulcans in his delegation, but it was Picard that stabilized Sarek's mind. And then Picard winds up, who are some of the most famous people in history, Sarek and Spock, and who's the bridge between them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's Kirk, just, yeah.
I just watched that episode.
I really wonder if we get a Pike series somehow, if this will stand, if we have more Pike, if he will not compete to the intellectual and the statesman and etc. of Picard. Of course, Picard has, after seven seasons and several movies, an outstanding record. But if we enlarge, for instance, what we now only have seen a little bit in Pike, if you enlarge that, could he not be getting at the same level? Question.
I tend to think that he could. I mean, he made a lasting impression on me in season two of Discovery. If CBS doesn't make a Pike show, they're going to have to answer to us as to why.
Well, because I mean, it might also depend on Anson Mount's availability.
True.
Aside from that, I mean, but I have to think, you know, especially I mentioned in the news that two other shows are supposedly in the works. One of them has
There's
to
probably
be.
Probably some serious wooing going on.
Right, right.
Woo.
It's just a question of getting everything in place, but they
I
have
think Anson Mount and CBS smells way too many Quatlus involved here. It's one of those things where we always think about fans and creators like, or the studio, the suits, banging heads. But in the modern era, it's like, you know, if everybody can give a signal to what they want, somebody ought to be. Now, how it gets executed is a whole different thing.
Right.
But, yeah. And who's in charge of it. But at least the initial go there, it's like everybody's in alignment here. They want to make money and expand the brand, and fans want the thing. So,
right.
And with Pike, too, I think with the writers that they have now, they're doing a much better job than what TNG had early on, to where they're able to flesh out Pike more rapidly, whereas Patrick Stewart had to really work at it.
And I think I think Picard benefits from the labored process that was Discovery's birth and, you know, first couple of seasons. I think all of that, and, you know, we've talked about it on this podcast, and I know everyone here has talked about it. I mean, they made some dumb mistakes with Discovery, things that they should have never done. But it wasn't just that. I mean, but the just things that they should not have done with Discovery. But as time has gone on, I've been a lot more willing to accept it or just say, okay, this is just...
It's a thing.
And the thing that I've...
Ship has sailed.
My biggest thing is Star Trek is not for you. Star Trek is for us. So if you want your 9-year-old to love the next Picard series or the next Pike series, the Enterprise can't look like it was made in 1966. It can't. It has to look like it's a part of our future. So if you can't get past that, Star Trek is not for you. You just have to, you're missing a fundamental point that what we see in Star Trek is a historical representation of the future. It is not the future itself. So
that's something that we've talked about. I know you've talked about it on the podcast, is one of the things that I think some of the fans have grappled with the new series is our future doesn't look like 1960. And even our future now doesn't look like TNG did in the 80s. Yeah. So you have to keep that forward-looking emphasis. And I don't have a problem with the consoles are shinier or the colors aren't perfect. Right. Mainly because just being in technology, I mean, the computer I had in 1982 is not the same as the computer I have now.
Yeah.
Right.
Really? Yeah,
exactly. Really gone to great lengths to keep in some of that classic aesthetics. Like, I mean, we saw the honeycomb decor in crew quarters on the Enterprise last season. Mm-hmm. I mean, the main bridge layout is the same. It's just shinier and more modern. It's
made for HDTV instead of
exactly.
See, that's a huge thing. I mean, if they wanted to shoot it like it was a 90s TV show, than maybe some of these people that are going, oh, it's too cinematic, it's too fast, it's too whatever.
Go watch The Orville. Yeah.
I do too.
I love it.
Since you brought it up.
But I mean, it's a great show. But you know, that's if that's what you're looking for, that's what you're going to want.
That, yeah, right. It looks like Voyager. I mean, it looks like TNG. It's shot. It's framed the same way.
TNG.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, if that's what you want to do, I mean, it works. But I think the Orville will probably look a little more dated 15 years from now. Say Discovery and Picard will. So I want to kind of get things back to Picard, and we'll do just another round.
Line must
real
be
quick.
Drawn here, and no yes, bother.
Exactly.
Ah, that's right.
And to say,
I brought down bigger men than you, Picard.
Oh, that episode.
Oh, I love that. That is one of my favorites. It's kind of, I think it's one of those episodes that has gotten better for me over time, mm-hmm. because especially when you look at the Picard over, you know, the 15 years that we saw him in Next Generation in the movies and now, that Picard that Satie was trying to take down is the Picard that we've grown to love, that you know, he is integrity, I think, yeah. is way to put it. All right, LT, another round. We'll try to be a little more succinct. This time. So that goes for everybody, not just you. But other quick thoughts about why Picard is compelling to you.
I think the thing that I've always loved about him too is, you know, it goes, as we've sort of beaten around, its presence.
Yes.
Is, you know, when he's on the bridge, he's the man. You know, when he goes somewhere, you know, he has that, and I didn't want to throw the gravitas that, you know, he comes in, he's the man, he's in charge. And we just looked at what they did, even through the movies, and people have said, you know, some of the movies are better than others. He still carried out, you know, all of those things that we've come to love. That he's, I think the thing I'm looking forward to with the new series is, you know, this elder statesman of Starfleet who did so much, who we're going to find out why he got out of the service, find that, you know, and see just how much of that he's going to bring with him that wasn't attached to the uniform. They've talked about the situations where, you know, in both of my uniformed careers, it's always the man makes the uniform doesn't make the man. So now that he's out of Starfleet, just seeing how he presents himself and how he operates now that he is not the face of Starfleet. He is this man with experience that's driven for a goal that's, you know, apparently moved to act.
Yeah. All right, Fred?
Yes, in English, you have the word character as being a person, but character is also, well, your character, having a character. And in Dutch, that are two different words. But if we're going to look to Jean-Luc's character, it's actually quite a strong character. And if you compare it to other people in Starfleet, and especially the captains, of course, I think he has the strongest character surviving the change to Locutus. Let's just imagine Janeway would have been assimilated, or Sisko, or, well, perhaps in Pike it's different. That's why I said that before. Who would survive that? Who would get over that. And I'm not saying he's completely over it, but who of the other ones could get over it? Perhaps some Vulcans. Perhaps Spock.
We know that Pike would, because we know his fate.
Yeah. No, that's why I'm mentioning him, because
those damn time crystals.
Yeah, he has a similar experience facing his own death, and he even could go on. So if you were looking at character, also Pike has a strong character. In both cases, becoming Locutus and seeing your own death and still going on, they're both strong characters. Right. And I don't know for Sisko or Archer or Janeway if that's also true. So, yeah, that's one of the things why he sticks out, I think.
Okay. James, hopefully your audio won't cut out this time. We're going to...
Well, before James' audio cuts out, my audio will cut out, because I'm going to leave you now. I have some other educational duties, grading students' exams, and I wish you all the best, and we'll hear the rest later, of course.
Well, thank you for joining with us, Fred.
Yes, thanks, Fred.
You've got 2,000 questions to mark.
Yeah,
but don't mention it. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, nice meeting you, Larry and Mark, and other guys.
Yes.
All right.
See you, Fred.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, Fred.
Bye.
All right. James, what about you?
I was actually going to comment on what Fred had started to comment on, was his resolve. Because, I mean, he's, out of anybody on in Trek, he's been through the most. I mean, he's been completely broken down. He's been robbed of his humanity on multiple occasions. I mean, we saw it in the episode with when he was being interrogated by the Cardassians, and I mean, he was so broken that at that last moment he was ready to say that there was five lights, and then he got his freedom.
Yeah.
And then the resolve came right back, and he came right back, and he said, there are four lights. And you just, the way he emoted that was just so, so powerful. It again goes toward Patrick Stewart's portrayal too. Like I said, that's to start with, I don't think any other actor could have done what he did.
I agree. Yeah. I think you would have to say, of performances that we've gotten from Captain, Patrick Stewart has probably had more than any of the other actors that have played a captain. Larry, what about you?
Yeah. Well, I was about to say that I feel like I stole a second round already talking about things that we overlook about him, as far as, and what I meant by being Klingon arbiter and the Romulan, well, getting away with being a Romulan infiltrator, but, you know, the Vulcan family tie, all of those things. What it meant was the times he transcended, when I say humanity, I don't mean that. I mean, you know, beyond the Federation sphere, what breaking through to what his qualities were that others saw that enabled trust.
Yeah.
But what we were talking about just now kind of was another angle of, you know, the Next Gen famously never went on film, never went to the mirror universe, but mirror universe is a great trope to be able to give people fish out of water moments, right? And see them in different guises. But you still did that, whether it's, you know, we're not thinking about Inner Light, where Patrick played a Picard as a whole other person, or whether you saw him in the Yesterday's Enterprise alternate universe, or, you know, the All Good Things finale, where it's the future Picard. And I say this having seen the premiere, I feel badly. I keep feeling badly for Michael Piller over the years, because when he wanted to do Romulans, the vote from people was, oh, Romulans are boring. So you had Romulans in Nemesis, you had Romulans in Star Trek 09, you've got Romulans in this now. And I always feel badly because his original idea for Insurrection was a Heart of Darkness Picard going rogue. And that's kind of, we're getting the idea, that's kind of, without spoiling anything, that's kind of what happens here. But he did go rogue in Insurrection. I just feel like it was a crippled kind of storytelling of Picard going rogue.
It was justified rogue.
Oh, yeah.
No, yes, it was. But what I mean is the scope. I mean, the budget and the depth and the gravitas and the grain of texture of what they were able to do with the story and everybody else around him and the plot. And, you know, half the movie was spent building and creating these other alien races. So you had some investment in them for something for him to push against to right. prove the point, where if they just started with a Romulan backstory, it would have already been there.
Right.
And gosh, that's what's happening here. Only now you've got Romulans and Borg. So, you know, in some ways I feel like one more time of Pillar being redeemed, I think that's the word. and not to get off on the plot of Picard, but as far as what Patrick and Picard will do here, I think by the time it's all over, and I don't know, I've seen the first three, I don't know how it ends up, but it's interesting to me. But once again, yeah, you're right. We'll see him out of uniform and what he could have done, but we've had hints of that. We have hints of that already, although Insurrection gets maligned a lot as being just an episode,
my favorite.
A 2-hour episode, but there've been some amazing 2-hour episodes. Just wasted in what a cinematic thing could have been, even on the old budgets. But that's the thing. It's like we have seen him out of uniform and out of character, as seeing what Patrick could do with the bones, no pun intended, with the bones of Picard, but wearing different clothes in different situations. And I think you're going to see, since he's elder, I think a lot of what's at play in the All Good Things future line will come into play too. Again, echoes of it, you'll see. Like crazy old guy running around trying to do something on his own, where Insurrection, it was crazy young guy trying to run off and do something on his own.
Well, you know, and that was like midlife guy, right, I think, right, at that point.
Right. Well, he's relatively younger. Okay.
He's been midlife guy since like the 80s. So, you know,
we need Star Trek Picard on the Stargazer series, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Tom Hardy's too old to play him now, though. So.
Probably.
And he doesn't look anything like him at this point.
Right, <That's true>. Right. Even, but anyway, there's some more crumbs to throw in the mix of if you want to get a handle on Picard in different guises. And nobody's mentioned Innerlight yet, so bang.
Yeah. Before we get to you, Mark, I want to ask a follow-up question to Larry. Larry does a podcast for the Roddenberry Podcast Network. I mentioned it already, called The Trek Files. It's amazing. If you want to get into the mind and into the history of, get in the mind of Gene Roddenberry, get into the history of Star Trek.
And those around him. Yeah.
And what I'm curious about is how much of that from all the things that you've read, you know, certainly I think there are things that are coming up that you haven't had an episode on. As well, or things that you have read that don't make a good episode, but how much of that was baked in with Picard and how much of it wasn't baked in? How much of it changed over time when they were kind of working on his character?
I think it's what I kind of said at the beginning of this show. I think the basic DNA was a pendulum swing away. Everything about early Next Gen was supposed to be, how is it the same but different from the original series? Because that's what was in play. And that was, and the original series was so in everybody's mind, you had the chunk of 10-15% of fandom that couldn't imagine what a Star Trek would even look like if it's not Kirk, Spock, and McCoy.
Right.
So that was a whole paradigm change that exploded. We went from having a show that people love to a universe when that was still a new concept, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. So yay on that. But
yeah.
At the time, Picard's DNA was all about, how is it not Kirk? You know, and Riker was supposed to be the Kirky things that we knew about Kirk. So Picard was supposed to be the elder statesman, the guy who had been around for forever. And, you know, the shorthand of that is to say, well, Kirk was 60s Gene Roddenberry, you know, James Bond era and younger guy. And Picard was elder Roddenberry, you know, in his 60s and 70s. So age-wise, not decade-wise, was the 80s.
Yeah.
So that was the main thing, that Picard was going to be very experienced, very smart, but just a steadier hand. And then, yeah, the reality came along where Patrick is like, gosh, can I get out of the chair in some of these shows and, you know, go down? And so, you know, Captain's Holiday was getting the captain laid. I mean, that was the that was the shorthand, but that was how they did it. But even then, Ira's first, and Ira was like a staff writer on Next Gen that one year. It was about, and some of this is Gene's health going down. When they would get Picard out of that initial box, it's like Gene as his, and now they're looking back and saying maybe he was having mini strokes even before the mini strokes, and that his temperament, if you talk to people, some of the outbursts, the second season, third season, fourth season, was increasing this way. And even the writer room fights and disagreements they would have about things. Making Picard less than perfect was like Gene suddenly was like, no, he would never do that. And you hear Ira talk about Captain Holliday and some of the other shows. Like Gene was resisting giving him any kind of flaws at all. And it wasn't this living in the 24th century humans are perfect straitjacket. It was just this thing about Picard. So it's almost like it's hard for us to talk about it because I think Gene in 86 and 87 wouldn't have reacted. It's sad to say. I think Gene just 2 or 3 years earlier wouldn't have reacted the way he did the year and two before he really had the debilitating strokes. Because he fought against giving Picard any flaws, any kind of, you know, not to make him Superman the cape, but
he has flaws. So,
every day he flaws every day. So that's an interesting question. And I hate to say this. It's kind of like, you know, the best Enterprise year was when they made Rick and Brandon stand down, but it's like it's maybe the blossoming of Picard. It was already a compelling character. And you know, in third season was when it bloomed, when Michael came and they had stability. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was a rough, horrible year, but they finally got a team together that all clicked, and it increasingly clicked until Best of Both Worlds. But even then, I think, you know, and what they did to him as Locutus fit Gene's okay. Gene died at the beginning of the fifth year, and the last year his health was increasingly going down, and Rick was increasingly taking over for making the executive decisions, and Gene was in the loop, but he wasn't standing up and stamping his fist on the table like he was the first couple, 2 to 3 years. So yeah, the whole thing about being the elder statesman was baked in, but it had to be liberated from if some of Gene's feedback was not maybe what he would have even said 2, 3, 4 years. It was just a victim of the timing. But where they took the character, I think it's always been very cohesive and totally fits. And Patrick's always had a big voice in that. And he had a big voice in Insurrection as far as the big picture goes. He was one of the Romulans are boring people. And I winced a little bit about that with Picard. But I think over the long haul, I trusted that if he was in the mix, the new series was going to be, you know, satisfying. And apparently that's part of that and the writer's room too, but Kirsten and Michael Chabon,
And I think Romulans as they were portrayed were kind of boring at times. So, you know, yeah. I don't think that as a people they are boring, but just the way that they were portrayed or how they were kind of like, you know, duplicitous to a fault, always, yeah. Shows no dimension within the people. And, right. And from what I've seen already, you know, I haven't been able to see any episodes, but from the little clips that we're seeing a much more layered type of Romulan people. Like I said in the Facebook group, you know, like just that one clip in that 3-minute behind the scenes kind of thing that they just released yesterday. I love Laris already. The things that she said to Picard.
That's finally out. Okay, yay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's like, oh, I know I'm going to love this character. So.
Well, there's at least one crowd scene of just like 30 or 40 faces in a crowd that you can kind of see. And the whole Klingon fix, which will eventually be good, is species diversity, right. You know, and it's like more than, oh, look, we've got black actors playing them too.
Yeah.
Species. Yeah. And you see a mob of Romulans of, you know, like with the V shaped, and you've got ridges and smooth foreheads both. And you've got all of this. And I think they're going to actually layer in a very quiet retcon of species diversity for Romulans, but just visually you see all kinds of haircuts and facial types.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, good.
And you know, there should be Romulans that look more like Vulcans because they are, you know, they're related. So, Mark, what about you?
Well, about Picard, I would definitely think of, and I have to agree with Larry, basically, he did go through a lot of changes, but there was a lot of things that I loved about the character in a sense that he was very emotional. You never really saw that within Kirk. And that was the first one. But there are layers and layers and layers of things that they did over the years and seasons for the particular character where he gained a relationship within his crew. In a sense, with Shatner, with Kirk, it was there for the core group. That was it. But the fact that he actually was very intimate and very understanding of the other parts of the actual, you know, group or the whole command that he has. Right. So, you know, that's the whole thing. I the fact that he actually cared for everybody, not the core group itself. And I think that made for a perfect character.
Mm-hmm. Thoughtful would be the word that I think summarizes that. He's a thoughtful captain, and thoughtful as a character. Ruthie, what about you?
I was thinking the opposite of what LT said. I don't think that Picard ever got broken because I think he got bent out of shape a lot, but I don't think that he actually ever got broken. Speaking of like chain of command and the Locutus event, because he was able to not necessarily bounce back, but he was able to reshape himself into his former self or a version of his former self, even though those things had a profound effect on him. To me, I feel like at the end of the chain of command, when he, you know, shouts that there are four lights at him, that to me is, I mean, he might have been about to say it, but he didn't. He still maintained that there were four lights. And even with being, you know, that and being turned into a Borg and just all that kind of stuff, I feel like he's very resilient.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that other people could have been able to weather. I think Fred mentioned that too, being able to weather the things that happened to him in his command. Also, Inner Light is one of my favorite episodes. We toyed with the idea of trying to get that music for our podcast, but that's just too complicated. So, yeah. Anyway, that's kind of, I guess, there are just so many singularly profound episodes of him and, you know, The Best of Both Worlds, Chain of Command, The Inner Light, and so many others. It just, he's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with all that. And I think most of what I wanted to say has been said. We're going to go to overall impressions. Larry, I know that you're going to have to leave. So I want to start with you. And also, you've had the benefit. And oh, by the way, we didn't say happy birthday, by the way.
Oh, happy birthday!
Oh. Happy birthday, Larry!
I want to get your impressions of Picard, but I also want to get, you know, your, since you've seen three episodes, you know, what, non-spoilery, of course, is there anything that you can, like, say as far as just your impressions of what you saw without spoiling it?
What I saw, I mean, there's some plot surprises, and again, it's 3 out of 10. And I saw the roots of things, the seeds of things being laid in that would blossom later. And you still haven't seen, after 3 hours, you haven't seen all of their new regular cast, much less Seven or Riker and Troy. So, you know, but it's exactly what I expected, given all the footage we've seen in the trailers and promos and all the comments from Patrick, from Alex, from anybody associated, from Michael Chabon, anybody associated with it. It just feels like, and I don't say this to damn it at all, it feels like a comfortable pair of slippers that you just bought, but they were already broke in for you. I mean, everything feels right. And this whole thing about, does it look like Next Generation shot in the night? I mean, it's like, that's like, what? I live in 2020 and I had all kinds of issues with Discovery. I have a different take than everybody. I see this whole thing about it's for the 60s. No, it's for the 20 teens. To me, that's a false choice. It's like, no, we can have all of it. But it depended on it not being born in chaos. I don't want to get off on that. But what I'm saying is this totally, I've said this the last couple of weeks on podcasts and things, on Tuesdays Live. This totally shows the result of being the second kid for this production group, because Star Trek is always insane to start up after a gap. Yeah. Creative decisions and personnel and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And people getting used to whatever the new thing is, whether it's a motion picture or it's a new series or whatever, or the first prequel. And this one has all the benefits of being the second child in the new family. And it just, I mean, there were only a couple of times in 3 hours where I kind of went, but you know, but not so much where it either threw me out or I went, oh, well, if I have to, I know how I would fix that. And maybe they will do it later on anyway, you know? So everybody I saw talk to came out just smiling.
Yeah.
Nobody was like raving, "Woohoo, that was the most amazing thing since sliced bread." And no one came out like, rawr, rawr, rawr. And there was plenty of a little bit after the Discovery premiere.
Oh, definitely. But
kind of going, okay.
And I think justifiably so.
So, yeah.
You know, because, and what I'll say, Larry, and we'd love to have you on maybe when season 3 is about to come on for Discovery and we can talk more about your impressions. But I think everything I've heard you say about Discovery, I 100% agree with you. They went too far, I think, with some of what they did to make it look futuristic, but they didn't have to make things look so different than what we saw before.
Yeah. And no enjoying anything on film, like a movie or a TV show, should not depend on you knowing how it was made.
Yeah.
But if there was ever one ever that's at least a clue to your sanity, it's Discovery's first season.
Yeah.
Because by the time the people working on the show saw their first episode aired, they were like 2 and 3 generations after the people that made the decisions on what to do in the beginning. Yeah. And that's all it comes down to. And no, that's not an excuse, but that's the fact. So that's why I was so excited for the second season and maybe now even the third. But anyway, I got to go.
Mm-hmm. But, well, Larry, we really appreciate you coming on and happy birthday again. And love to have you come back.
Okay. You guys got me thinking about some things I hadn't really thought about. But in that, because it's kind of a comfort zone, I was like totally ready unless something insane happened. It was kind of like, yes, this is exactly what I expected. This is, you're all doing the smart things. You're all doing exactly what I would have done. So it obviously must be brilliant. But that's reassuring given, and so many people feel burned by Discovery. It's like, how can these two both coexist? It's like, well, it's very easy to coexist. It's slightly a lot of different people doing this, but it's just, they've been the skeleton that you're hanging the meat on has been, this is horribly tortured metaphors, but it's been through the mill. This is not the same thing as, just like Discovery doesn't act like it feels
right.
It did 2 years ago. So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Picard would have been a much worse show had it been the first one.
Oh yes. Well, we wouldn't have all these feels for Pike if Pike had been a character in the first season.
True. Yeah. Very true.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, guys.
Thank you, Larry. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye.
All right.
Bye.
And LT, great to see you for once, finally.
Thank you, Larry.
And thank you again.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. All right.
And then there were 5.
And then there were 5. Okay. So we'll take another round here, and we're going to go with overall. What?
Talking about? We've already been recording for an hour.
No, not that.
Oh.
I meant overall, I want to talk about Picard as a show, not Picard as a character.
I was like, let's start to wrap it up because I still need to rewatch.
I want to do one round of our overall impressions about the show, like what you think you're going to see, what you want to see, what you hope you don't want to see. You don't have to say all of those things, but just any thoughts or observations or what have you about Picard. You know, we're only 5 days away from seeing the first episode. So, LT, what do you think?
I'm still excited. I mean, we've gotten everything we had in the trailers. You know, I read 2... should have had 3 Countdown comics. Thanks, IDW. But the comics opened up a few things that, you know, dovetailed in with what we saw in the previews. Then we had the short track drop, and that opened up a few things that I hadn't really thought about, and sort of tied a few more threads and threw a few more breadcrumbs out there.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen the short track, the only thing I need to not even say but do is...
It's a trap!
Anyway, yes, there is Rogue Synths, and I don't even know if it comes into play in those three episodes that Larry has seen, but supposedly that's a big part of the past going in. But anyway, James.
Yes. There's just so much that that's coming up, and it's just trying to find what to expect. I'm not sure. I mean, the table is definitely set with the Romulans on how they're going to play into it, how the synths are going to play into it. The short track I thought was just so incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, it had me in tears. Just how powerful it was, and it's almost safe to say that the show is going to be just as powerful, because it's setting the table for it, and seeing the performances from everybody, and seeing how these characters are going to get through things.
Yeah, I never thought I would see angsty 12-year-olds and give it a 9.75 out of 10.
Me either, but it was oh, yeah. just the way that short was put together was just amazing.
Yeah.
I'm worried though, and that if Geordi was still on Utopia Planitia, if he's gonna be extinct now.
Yeah, I worry about that too. But we don't know, and I wonder if there's something in that third issue that
was spoilery for the show.
Spoilery for the show, and that's why they delayed that third issue, because it was supposed to come out this week, but it's not coming out until the 29th now. So that's like,
which is why it's no longer a countdown comic.
And see, I was trying to take the completely different thing of, you know, we didn't get the offset on the press right, or the colors weren't right, or I'm trying to not to say. Nah. Oh, come on.
And by the way, I still want to say, if Brian, if they kill off Crusher, we're gonna have words, because you brought it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they better not kill off Crusher.
No.
I mean, Beverly, that is, not Webb.
Yeah, I know, Beverly. Well, Wesley's in limbo. He's out in the cosmic unknown.
Right.
As far as there being a delay in the comic, you can only say one thing. And I think this is also going to be appropriate to the show.
There's a conspiracy out there. You know what I'm saying? There's a conspiracy. A C-O-N conspiracy.
Yeah. Always a classic.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love that one.
Yeah. So, to me, that's, I don't know for sure if that's why, but it, I mean, I guess we'll see once we get that third issue.
Yeah. Yes, we will.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you, reading those, Mark?
No. The way I'm entering Picard right now is, the last thing I ever saw of Jean-Luc Picard was the last movie, the last appearance on a Star Trek show, and that was it. And I'm coming in completely blind, and I was recommended the Star Trek comic at my local comic shop, because I mentioned about the podcast network.
Yeah.
So, and they were like, well, you should really, I was like, no. I want to go in because I want to go in as if I was a viewer back in the 80s when the show started and I got to see all the movies. Now I just want to see what happened to Jean-Luc Picard out of the gates, fresh and complete. And that's my attitude. Mm. So, you know, I just have my memories of what went on. I could always replay and watch specific shows or movies But my feeling is I want to see what happened to him. Mm-hmm. And then just be blinded by whatever they put in comicdom. You know, that could be just fan fiction for all we know.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it could end up that way, but it sounds like, based on the fact that one of the co-creators is one of the writers of the comic, it probably will tie in. But my concern at this point, and it seems kind of funny to say, is I'm so obsessed with this show. I mean, I have a hat for this show on my head, listeners, and we haven't even seen the show yet, so that goes to show you. But I'm just concerned that it won't be as good as I have convinced myself that it will be. Now, it will be. I have faith that it, you know, faith in the heart.
It's been a long time.
Yeah. It's been a long road getting there from there to here.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Where's that eye roll emoji?
I do have faith based on the producers, based on Patrick Stewart's commitment to the show right from the beginning. You know, he's an executive producer, and for him to put his name on this show, if this is going to be a bad show, I think it's going to tarnish his well, it's like when the X-Files came back.
Yeah.
I think the X-Files was a classic show, and the last two seasons of the X-Files, to me, has tarnished it because it has not lived up to it. And I don't think that we're going to get that with this show because, A, they didn't try to do the same show. B, it is the show. I think it is the show that we need. I think it's the character that we need, and it's the show that we need. And I think that they're going at it with the right sensibility. They're not trying to make the Next Generation Phase 2, you know, or the next generation. They're not trying to do that. They are trying to make something new. And like I say, based on who's involved, and I think the course corrections that Discovery's made over the first two seasons, I'm confident that this is going to be worth seeing. So,
absolutely. Especially with Kurtzman wanting to expand the universe and keep Star Trek going. It's like X-Files, that last two seasons, that's a cash grab, that they just wanted to bring it back and get money. And with Trek, it's something that they're trying to bring expand. In and yeah, it's they want to make it the MCU.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so this is a new Trek with a new Picard, thinking of him being older, seasoned, and not taking any crap at this point, I think, in my opinion. And he's just going to get things done as far as he can. And on top of that, we have a slew of people that were in the Star Trek universe, you know, 709. You know, first right. off, that's a Voyager character. So now we're getting everything that has amounted up to this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that we're going to be in for a hell of a show.
Oh, yeah.
Let's start to wrap things up here. I'm just going to make this open and say, does anybody have anything else that they would like to put out there as far as Picard, things they want to see in Picard that we don't know about, characters that we don't know about, races or species that we don't know about? Is anything just potpourri, whatever? You don't need to wait for your turn. Just whatever. Go ahead.
We've been teased by the Borg. You know, they've shown us, you know, we've gotten a few of the clips of Hugh and what he looks like now. You know, we've seen Seven. I'm curious to see how they handle the non-collectivized Borg, you know, the independent Borg that were there. Because the last few things we saw in Voyager were that they couldn't remove all of the implants. that they couldn't remove all of the augmentations. And apparently by this one still they released, you know, he doesn't have all of the headgear. He's got hair now. So,
and he's got an eye like Detmer.
Yep. So
I noticed that.
So that's going to be interesting. The whole tie-in, the Romulan Borg synth, like how all that hooks together, that I know some people have said it for the players of Star Trek Online, you know, STO had a gig where the Romulans were trying to use reverse engineered Borg technology to upgrade their ships. And there have been some hints and rumblings that that was going to play into it. So that would be, I don't want to say fan service, but that would be kind of a nod to all of that proto-canon that's been going on in STO for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Just all the stuff that we've seen that, you know, hasn't really been fleshed out and put together, but all these little tidbits they've been throwing us, you know, I'm just excited to see how all of it comes together.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
One thing I'd like to see is to finally get a mention of Discovery in the future. So that way all the naysayers of Discovery can just shut the F up.
FTFU.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we talked a little bit about it on the last episode, you know, the short track, where some people are just like completely lost it. Oh, you have 23rd century ships. And and it's just like, what the hell? What kind of Star Trek have you been watching for the past, you know, 30 years? We've seen these old ships, you know, Excelsior, Miranda, Oberth class, still in active fleet service for, you know, 100 years. And now you're complaining about some ships that are 20 years older when you literally have to save billions of Romulans.
Hell, like, we have the USS Constitution docked in Boston Harbor is still an active ship. It's actually the only it's a museum right now, but it's still an active ship. It's never been decommissioned. It's actually the only ship in the US Navy that's ever sunk another vessel.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, it happens.
You know, you're gonna
have exactly, and it's but the thing is, they're hitting on the wrong things. They're hitting on things that they know nothing about. As a retired sailor,
it's like it can't be accepted because we have mothball fleets. And it's like, what kind of freaking world do you live in, buddy? You know, it's like you cannot accept anything that hasn't been shown to you before.
Right.
Living in their own mind.
There are people who still think the Earth is flat, so...
Yeah.
I don't understand those people either, so, you know, they're just... Some people are just life's little mysteries, and you just gotta
shake
your head at them and not pay attention to them anymore.
We've been looking at every Trek series, we've been kind of looking through a peephole.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going on everywhere else.
Exactly.
I was thinking about this. As much as we know about Picard, what was Picard doing between the Stargazer court-martial and him taking command of the Enterprise? Do we know? I don't think we know. There may be a novel about it, but I don't think it's ever really been discussed. And this is a character that we know everything about, but we don't know that.
All right, I want to interject with that because that was my theory and my thought. Maybe he was getting busy. Maybe he had a child, and maybe she will come into play somewhere within the next two seasons.
That was Bloodlines, but it was a fake child.
But this will be a real one because it would be within this real time.
Yeah.
And he'll be like, wait, you're fake. No, I'm not.
I know that there has been some conjecture that Dodge is his child. I don't think that that's probably true, but I wouldn't be surprised if maybe Dodge ends up being a rogue synth, or certainly, you know, like an improved Data, or, you know, like Lol was, you know, and looks very much human and acts human, or the character that was kind of like Data's mom. I can't remember her name, but there was that one episode where Soon made his mother essentially an android, and she had no knowledge of being an android. Yeah. So you know, she could be someone like that, but you know, we'll see. All right, one question I'll ask you guys, and again, this is open to everybody. What character would you, and Ruthie, you've already answered this question, so we know you want to see Crusher, so do I. But what character that we don't know is going to be in the show that you would like to see?
Admiral Jellicoe.
That's good. That's good. I just watched those shows, Chain of Command. Yeah, he'd be interesting. Mm. How is Ronnie Cox's health?
I think he's still around. I don't know.
I guess you guys probably haven't heard the episode, but I conjectured that the character that Picard is talking to, the Admiral, that he's trying to convince to do something, is a placeholder, because she seems to be an actress that no one has identified. So she's actually going to be Janeway.
That would be amazing.
Amazing. I don't think it's going to happen, but
It would be amazing if it does. I love Kate Mulgrew.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love her too. I think it would be great if she showed up.
Yeah.
But
in the faceless admiral role, because her voice is way too distinctive.
Yes, it is.
Oh yeah.
It's very true.
Yeah.
And has become no less distinct with age.
Yeah.
It would have to be the Starfleet Admiral.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because we never see their faces.
The only person I would think I would like to see would be the Doctor from Voyager, which would be Robert Picardo. I love that character.
Yeah. I love that character as well.
I thought of a character since the last thing we recorded. I'd like to see O'Brien.
Oh.
That would be cool. That would be cool. I know, James, that's a favorite character of yours. But Chief
O'Brien.
I would like to see Worf too. And I was very happy to get that one report that Alex Kurtzman said that he has to look like regular Worf. Because if he looked like a Discovery, you know, even with the modifications that they did, I would have trouble accepting it, you know, because Worf to me is the Klingon race. He wasn't raised by Klingons, but he is the prototypical Klingon. He's
the Christopher Lloyd looking character from Star three. Trek 2. Was it 3?
3.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, and it's and even Larry brought it up. I mean, there's more than one race within all these species. So it's there's plenty of room for it.
Right.
And he is the Klingoniest Klingon ever.
Exactly. He's like the prototype.
Absolutely.
He is the Klingon without the duplicitous nature of the Klingons. Like he just won't have that. You know, so that's
the Klingons are duplicitous.
Well, this is something that came up.
The Duras would differ.
They are not typical Klingons.
Yeah, but this came up. And
he had his strings pulled by Romulans, too. So.
We did another, when I was on another panel, we talked about that. And it's that, you know, Worf, because he wasn't raised by Klingons, he basically is aspiring to all of these things that he thinks Klingons should be. And the regular native Klingons, they are not necessarily as hidebound with all the traditions that Worf is trying to have.
Well, but, he's definitely idealistic.
Right. They have more more emotion than he does, where he is all about just honor.
Right.
And I'll tell you, another character I'd like to see, even since you brought up Papa O'Brien, is he's kind of getting up in years. So what about is Molly?
Molly? Maybe. I know Molly was a part of that eighth season of Deep Space Nine in that documentary, wasn't she?
Right. I'm just saying, bring her back as, you know, I'm trying to juggle the math in my head. Maybe she's a lieutenant now if she went to Starfleet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She would be. She could be that age. Maybe a junior grade, but she'd certainly be.
She would be at least in her 20s, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She was born in the fifth season, so.
And you can throw, and as far as kids go, you could throw what, Naomi Wildman?
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
She would be older now. I mean, that's to help not have all of the gray hair characters that, you know, that were previously there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. One that I'd like to see is because I don't think he got a fair shake on the show to start with, because he had no depth, was Chakotay. I would like to see him finally get fleshed out, because he was just like your stereotypical Native American who really didn't do much.
The tragedy of that whole thing too, that they had a consultant on staff that was supposed to be educating them about, you know, the Native American lifestyle and culture and all that, and he was a fake.
Fake. It was. Yeah. It was proven. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It was sad.
That's terrible.
Yeah. So all the stuff that they had about Chakotay, a lot of it was just BS.
Robert Beltran is actually Mexican too. He's not Native American.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a common sort of thing.
Yeah, Curtis plays so many different nationalities that you can't really necessarily.
And it would be really cool to see him, because his hair is so white now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well,
I think it would be good if they had him in there, because like you said, like, I would say of all the, you know, first officers in Star Trek, I think he's the worst of them. Just because his character is poorly defined, you know.
Yeah, well, he was a renegade before he got thrown back into
that should have been a cool drawing point from
and
him.
Not, and yeah,
they just never
that,
did anything with
that's,
it.
That's my biggest disappointment with Voyager. They took that Maquis storyline and for whatever reason they buried
it.
They trashed it. Because even the first like six or seven episodes of Voyager, you know, going back and doing a rewatch of it.
Yeah, it's just the integration.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The integration of them into the crew.
Yeah. And then they just dropped it. And then it just became like the anomaly of the week.
Yeah.
You know? They didn't really bring it back until the very end, too.
Exactly.
When they speak about it. And that's it. And it's like, well, there was three seasons where we didn't really speak about this.
Right.
You know, and
maybe they can bring back Harry Kim. Retirement party for Ensign Harry Kim.
He's at every con. He's a great guy too.
Yeah. Well, we had Martin on one of the roundtables, and yeah, you know, he's actually friends with Garrett Wang. So, okay. So let's ask this question. We'll wrap it up here in a minute, but. Is there anything that would be in this show that would disappoint you? Like, if they go there, would there be something that would disappoint you?
Well, I mean, you have something in mind because you're asking the question. So
I know.
Why don't you say your piece first? Because I don't think the rest of us have any idea what you might be.
Yeah, like I said, I'm coming in cold. So
I got no idea. I don't like guess what I'm thinking.
I mean, my thing is, and I've already stated it, if they kill off Crusher, and then I'm blaming Brian. So,
Yeah, to me, I think, agreed. Like, all right, so I'll say if they bring back Data in some way, I think I'll probably be disappointed, because I think that would kind of be cheap to bring him back in some way. Like, okay, they could probably bring back Before, but if Before is essentially Data, I think that would be cheap to me.
Well, Data was downloaded into Before.
He was.
At the end of Nemesis. So, they really could bring him back, technically.
They could.
They could get only snippets of him, right. I think, based upon the memory that they have of him.
I guess what I'm trying to say...
It's almost one program written over another, so it's, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, if Data is back, he'd better be a lot different than he was. Like, if we're going to get Seven of Nine back, and she's changed and Hugh has changed a lot, I would expect Data to have changed a lot as well.
Oh, and he would have to be, especially since they have an army of synths now. And
right.
he fought so hard to be recognized as a sentient being and not be forced into slavery by the Federation. And honestly, that could actually be a very good way to bring him in.
Right.
Is to have him be like, you know, what the hell did I fight for all those years in Starfleet to have this happen now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he could be a representative of a new race of android.
Right.
Mm. At that point. Could be. And yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, not to bring him, that they would bring him back, but if he's unchanged, if he's like the same.
Oh, no, they can't.
Yeah. You can't. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyone else? I guess not.
No. No,
I'm with James.
Really. Ruthie's tired.
Yeah, I am tired. Yeah. I'm with James, though. If Crusher's dead, we'll have words.
It's Brian's fault.
No. I don't want her to die.
I want them married.
I want, it would be so awesome.
You should have left it at that, but you brought up that she might be dead. So.
Well, she might be dead.
Pointing at you.
Oh, come on.
I want her to be.
You jinxed it.
I'm afraid. Your truth to the universe.
Okay.
See, I'm afraid that they're going to end up that they got married and they got divorced.
Yeah.
Like, well, that would be all good.
Do that towards the end. Yeah.
And the Iremotic syndrome, is that going to play in with Picard?
Yeah, very possibly.
Well, it's possible, but I'm still of a mind that what we saw in All Good Things was a possible future and not the future.
Yeah.
That's my take as well. Yeah. Okay. So we're going to wrap it up. I'll give you guys any last final thought as I, say goodbye. LT, first of all, I want to thank you for this topic. I think it's been a great topic for us to go through, and of course, because of that, I have to say, and it doesn't play. It's a stupid thing. It's not playing.
Yeah,
my soundboard has malfunctioned. But
da, 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 da,
yeah,
da, da, yeah, exactly. Da, da, da.
But anyway,
I was afraid you were going to give me shock horror.
Nope. Anyway, thank you for this topic. I think it was a great topic to kind of whet our appetite for Picard. If anyone wants to contact you, or if you have anything going on, how can people contact you or listen to you?
Well,
if you want to listen to me, you have to hear me here, I guess.
we're planning, James, LT, and I are planning, once that third issue comes out, we're going to do a Patreon on the comic book. So, and if anyone, that's not just to the three of us, if there's anyone listening that would like to get in on that, let us know. That'll be a Patreon episode, though. And those are a little more, I guess, freeform, not as heavily edited as these are. So, but if anyone wants to join, you just have to become a Patreon supporter. So, James, thank you for being on, and again, thank you for your support, both on Patreon, but just overall, for our podcast. You've been a great
Absolutely, light and I'm sorry about the technical snafus today.
It happens.
It happens. It happens.
Yeah,
and that's the benefit of, you know, having a round table, because if you do have a problem, we can just, you know, come back to
move
you.
On.
And Mark, I definitely have to thank you. You were a last minute replacement. Of course, I wanted it was we had so many people that wanted to be on this round table, and it was just like, I can't have Mark on here. We have too many. But when we had a couple of people that couldn't make it this time around, I wanted to ask you. So thank you so much.
Yay.
And thank you for being such a great partner in crime on the network and on the podcast. And I miss you, man. It's been a while since we've been able to do this. But all right, how can people contact you and listen to you?
Oh, well, the best way you could contact us is through talkthroughmedia.com, obviously. The other show that I do would be Panels to Pixels. That's on the Next Level Podcast Radio Network. And you could find that on panelstopixels.com. Or you could actually go to YouTube, which would be Panels to Pixels Podcast at YouTube. So check it out. Listen, have fun. And I just look forward to everybody listening and having fun with it. Keep listening to Talk Through Media. We have a lot going on.
Yep. Yeah. And we have some new things in store. So coming soon, we'll be adding some new podcasts to the network very, very soon. It's heavily in development right now. Ruthie, people know how to contact you, I think, through this podcast, but yep. Why don't you take this time to tell people how to connect with us.
All right. If you want to send us anything, you can do that by going to talkthroughmedia.com/feedback. You can submit text or audio there. You can also call us at 216-232-6146. For Picard, you can contact us at PicardCast@talkthroughmedia.com. Or we have our designated Facebook group, which is facebook.com/group/StarTrekTTMpodcasts. And you can also tweet us at PicardCast. So that's how.
A great way you can support us is to share our content when we post things on Twitter and Facebook. So the things that are in the Star Trek Talk Through Media Facebook group are not shareable. That's a private group, but we post things at facebook.com/talkthroughmedia that can be shared, as well as at Star Trek TTM, which is our general discovery Twitter, and our Picard Cast Twitter. So share our content there, and follow us if you don't already do so. And like our Facebook page as well. Subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or the podcast client of your choice. And while you're there, give us a rating or review. And another place you can give us a rating or review is at podchaser.com. And I want to thank James for his reviews of both podcasts on there. I can do that personally since you're with us today.
Yes, sir.
So podchaser.com is a new website, I think, that allows you to rate and review, because, you know, a lot of podcast apps don't, but Podchaser is kind of becoming the place where they will integrate into other podcast apps. So anyway, rate us there if you don't use Apple Podcasts, podchaser.com. And much like James and LT and also Fred, who was with us earlier, there is our Patreon group, which is at patreon.com/Brian and Ruthie. And since the last time we we recorded our last episode on Wednesday, the 15th January, we've had two new Patreon supporters that have joined us. Brian, Brian Shiro from Hawaii, who is has given us a lot of feedback over the last couple of seasons on Discovery, especially, and Christoph, and I'm not going to get your name pronounced right, so I'm just going to say Christoph from Austria. You just joined yesterday, so thank you so much for your Patreon support. And like we said, we just released a Patreon episode to subscribers that was a call-in show where LT and Fred and Kim also joined us. James, if you were watching it, you would have been able to see him later. But the nice thing that we have is an after call. So we things that are kind of like after dark, if you could say. But the things that, you know, that's when we kind of threw caution in the wind. But James joined us for that. But anyway, the recorded portion of that episode is on the Patreon feed. And we're going to be doing regular content now that we've finally got that going. Anyway, thank you for all your patronage. That sounds like a political scandal. But anyway, subscribe to us now. I mentioned it last episode, but subscribe to us. This episode is available on three different podcast feeds. The Talk Through Media podcast feed, which has all of the shows within the Talk Through Media network. The Discovery podcast feed, which has Discovery and now Picard. And if you just are not into Discovery, we have a feed for you as well, which is just Picard. So you can find all those at talkthroughmedia.com. There are links to them. And of course, Mark and I do The Walking Dead Talk Through and Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. And I'm sorry, but when World Beyond comes out, it's just going to be The Walking Dead Talk Through. We're not going to call it The Walking Dead Talk Through Beyond or something. But yeah, so I'll just say that we are really looking forward to this, and it's literally only 5 days away from the time that we record that we're going to be able to get more Picard in our life, and I'm really happy about that. But until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.
Good night, everybody.